This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Alan Levine. Alan's the CEO of Baylor Health. Baylor Health is a fascinating health system, and Alan's had great experience in not just running a health system, but also running state healthcare administrations. So a fascinating background for being a CEO of a health system. Alan, can you take a moment and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Baylor Health?
Well, sure. Thank you, Scott. I started my career with HCA in the hospital world, and ended up, my path took me through several different types of health systems. At one point, running a large public health system and called Broward Health in Florida, and now I'm currently at Ballad Health, which is a system that was born as a result of a merger between two previously competing health systems in a largely rural and non-urban part of Northeast Tennessee and Southwest Virginia. And somewhere in there along the way, I spent a little bit of time working for Governor Jeb Bush in Florida as his deputy chief of staff and as the Secretary of Healthcare Administration for the state of Florida. Served as the Secretary of Health in the state of Louisiana for Governor Bobby Jindal. And unfortunately, my tenure in both departments of health got consumed quite a bit by a lot of disasters. I mean, we had 12 major hurricanes between Florida and Louisiana that made landfall, a major pandemic, the largest oil spill in the history of the country off the coast of Louisiana, the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, and other different challenges that really, I think, helped inform kind of what my strengths are, I think, today, and certainly exposed some of my weaknesses along the way as well.
Take a moment. You've worked for some really interesting people. Bobby Jindal, Jeb Bush, also probably at one point for Rick Scott or with Rick Scott at some point in the HCA era. Any thoughts on the three of them? Anything you could share with us? You know, not negative, just interesting in perspective and in seeing them as leaders and so forth.
Sure. In fact, I also served as Rick Scott's healthcare transition director when he became governor. Transitioning from the administration of Charlie Crist to Rick Scott, and you know, it's they all have different leadership styles, but one thing they all had in common, which I think has helped me a lot, is, you know, their proclivity to lean in to situations. I think they all had the perspective that they were only going to be governor for so long, and they wanted to make a difference while they were governor, and they wanted to, whether it was a disaster that was happening to their state or whether it was proactive policy, you know, their approach was to lean in and make every day count. And I think that's helped inform the way I act as a leader and the way I try to encourage my team to act. The personality of the organization, any organization I try to run, is to lean into problems, look for problems to solve, and never coast, because we only get, you know, it's a privilege to serve in these roles, and you want to make your time there matter.
And take a moment and talk about, following up on exactly that, leaning in, making your time matter, what are two to three pieces of advice, Alan, that you would have for leaders and emerging leaders?
Well, you know, I think the first thing is, I ask a lot of questions, oftentimes not so much that I care about the answer. It's more so to make sure the people that I surround myself with are focused on the details they need to be focused on. I trust them, but I also make sure that they're able to understand what's going on in the areas of responsibility that they have, and that I ensure that they're constantly leaning in. And, you know, sometimes an answer that, you know, I don't know, I think those tend to raise flags for me that I need to dig in a little bit and make sure that leader is engaged. So I think that's part of it is training folks to constantly be looking at the details and understanding how those details cascade into larger issues for the organization. And then, you know, back to what I said about leaning in, any day that you're not, that you're static, any day that you're not dynamic and you're just static, is a lost day. Every day there's opportunity to advance the organization. And my expectation of folks is that we never, ever stop focusing on advancing the organization. And in my own position, if there's ever a day where I'm not focused on that, then I know it's time for me to move on and re-energize myself and do something else. But as long as we're given the privilege of leading, then the organization has a right to expect that every day we're going to try to move the organization forward, because by becoming static, your competition and other innovators are going to pass you by.
And talk then for a moment about Daylight Health. You're serving a great community, semi-urban and rural, always challenging in today's world, given just the dearth of healthcare resources and so forth. Talk to us about your top priorities there in trying to make a difference for the greater Ballot Health community.
Well, I think like most rural areas, which make up, 80 to 90% of America's geography, we're facing major problems with the hospitals. I think most people know that we've more than 120 have closed, and another 400 to 500 are expected to close. And Ballot Health was created under the premise that we don't want to see our hospitals close. We want to transform. So my top priorities are to work with the federal government. I serve on the LAND 2.0, which is advisory to HHS on value-based, moving towards a value-based system. I think there's a role a system like ours can play to help move towards a value-based model, a total cost of care model, where we have predictability of revenue. I think that will help preserve rural hospitals and will help reduce the overall cost of healthcare in the future. So one of my top priorities near term today is to get us through the effects of this pandemic, the financial implications of it, re-steady the organization, and then try to keep moving us towards that value-based model where we can transform and become more what our patients are. We want to skate where the puck is going and not where the puck is today, so to speak, using a hockey analogy. But I mean, I think the rural hospitals and the dynamics for rural hospitals are very negative. And it's going to take something innovative to change the trajectory that we're on. And so my priority really is to try to be innovative, work with CMS and our state leaders to come up with models that are different and that are sustainable.
Well, thank you very, very much. How excited are you about the future at Ballot Health and what you're doing there? On a 1 to 10, where's your level of excitement for what you're doing?
Oh, we're a 10. I mean, Harvard University, we just announced this week that Ballot Health and Harvard are partnering to do a national study on the effects of competition and some of the rural dynamics in rural America. There's been such little data and information available to policymakers on the impact of some of the national policies and state policies on rural hospitals, so we can understand why they're so unstable right now. Ballot has become, I think, a logical partner in those types of policy analyses, and I'm excited that Ballot is in a place. We were formed under what's called state action immunity under federal antitrust law. So our Ballot is extremely unique. We were created for the purpose of sustaining access in a rural region, and that lends itself to a lot of opportunity to learn from what we're doing. So East Tennessee State University recently announced, with money that we contributed, the Center for Rural Health Research, and they're going to be partnering with Harvard on this study. The governor of Tennessee matched our contribution through the legislature. So there's a $25 million pot of money for investment into research. This has never been done in our region before. So these are things that we're doing now. I won't say all the decisions are easy. Reducing unnecessary duplication is often difficult. Oftentimes you're dealing with the emotional aspects of people feeling like they've lost something when you go from, three trauma centers in a region, down to one level one trauma center instead of two level one trauma centers. somebody's going to feel like they lost something, and that's understandable. But it's, you know, having two level one trauma centers in a rural region is also not financially sustainable. And those are the hard decisions that have to be made. And that's why Ballad was formed. And I think there's going to be a lot to learn from what we're doing. So I'd call it a 10. I think we're real excited about our future.
Alan, that's fantastic. It's great to hear. And as you said, rural areas make up 80% of the country, and yet they're horribly underserved. And it's hard to get their level of providers and the numbers of providers that you need. There are great providers, but just not enough of them. And so just a great pleasure to hear your thoughts, and what a remarkable career in terms of the work you've done with state health administrations and some of the most interesting politicians in our country and statespeople. Alan, thank you so much for joining us today, and great luck at Ballad Health. We cheer for you.
Well, Scott, thank you so much. I appreciate the work you guys do.
Thank you very, very much.